Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on billions for the bankers, debts for the people, right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history here in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and to sell his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, and we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program. The movers and shakers behind this New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, then go to our archives page, and you can download it right there, georgegordon.org, and download it right off the archives page. Well, Billions for the Bankers and Debts for the People is a little booklet written by Sheldon Emery back in 1982. And the other day, I was jotting around on the Internet, and Dirk came up with a couple of articles here, one of them called 19 Facts About the Deindustrialization of America That'll Blow Your Mind. The second one was 40 bizarre statistics that will reveal the horrifying truth about the collapse of the U.S. economy. Now, our politicians, our bankers, and our public officials are telling us, sit back and relax, everything's under control, and we're going to straighten everything out, and we'll be back on track here in just a short period of time. On the other hand, I was reading the International Forecaster, and I'll give you an excerpt or two from that as we progress along here, and Bob Chapman says these fools haven't paid attention to history. We are entering into a period of economic history that occurs about once every 500 to 1,000 years. It's the collapse of the world's economy. It's done that two or three times in the past, and it's in the process of doing that again. And I put those stories together, and I remembered this story about billions for the bankers and debts for the people, because there are 17 economic laws in the Bible, 17. And when you violate a law, there's a penalty. There's an outcome, whether we call it a penalty or we just call it cause and effect. Let me give you an illustration. You're driving down the road. You know, you're cruising along at 60 miles an hour or 70. And pretty soon, you see a sign along the road, and the sign along the road says, curve, slow to 35. And you're in a hurry to get to where you want to go. But you can see plainly the sign that says slow to 35. And so if you're going to slow to 35 miles an hour, that's going to take some time out of your schedule. And so you say to yourself, I think I'll just keep going at 70 miles an hour. I don't think I'll slow down. I don't think I will follow the advice given me on that sign. So you continue on at 70 miles an hour, and you hit the 35 mile an hour curve. And about halfway through the curve, you'll notice that you're getting a little lighter in the seat of the car as you're sitting there. And pretty soon the car leaves the pavement and flies through the air, and then goes off the side of the road and ends up down in the creek bottom someplace. Now, that's pretty predictable. It's the laws of physics. Doesn't have anything to do with miracles. Doesn't have anything to do with you know, with the price of putty in China, but it's just a cause and effect relationship that occurs, you know. Now, most of us, when we see a sign that says slow to 35, we at least slow down to 55 or 50 or something like that, at least I do. Now, I haven't had that experience. I haven't run off the road by running around the curbs here at 70 miles an hour when it says 35, but I remember as a kid, we were testing the Beatrice overhead. No, it wasn't Beatrice, Lolita, the Lolita overhead. In the old days, they used to run the railroad tracks alongside the highways, or they ran the highway along the railroad track. I'm not sure which came first. But every once in a while, they'd want to change sides. They'd want the highway to travel on the other side of the railroad tracks. And so when they got to an embankment someplace and they had an opportunity, they'd just make a 90-degree turn under the railroad tracks. And, of course, in order to go 90 degrees from one side to the other side, you had to slow down quite a bit. So, you know, they'd put a sign up there, slow down to 35 miles an hour to make this kind of an S-sweeping turn underneath there. Well, now, a number of people hadn't done that. And there at the Lolita overhead, there were a number of people who had been killed there. And everybody knew that. In fact, one night, some guy hit that concrete abutment there on the, you know, that holds up the railroad tracks. They estimated he was going 90 miles an hour when he hit it. And the car, when it hit, it upended, and the top of the car smashed against the abutment and smashed it flat down to the seats, knocked the engine clear out of the car. The engine was gone, sitting over here alongside the road. And then, of course, the guy was killed. And, you know, stories like that kind of abounded. And so young kids, you know, they look at that sign and then they say, well, how fast can you go under there? We know that 90 is too fast, but 35 is too slow. So what's the right speed? So one day I'm in ag class and I think it was David Wagner. He says, well, I can go under there at 40 miles an hour like a shot. And that 35 doesn't mean anything. See? And then another kid, he says, oh, hell, 40 is nothing. I can go under there at 45. So, you know, as time would progress along, you know, we would go under there and then we'd try to set a new record. Well, I had a 47 Plymouth. And my old 47 Plymouth, it'd go under there at about 45, all right. But you had to move over onto the other side of the road so that you could kind of straighten that turn out a little bit. Well, there was a kid, he had a 49 Merc. And those Mercs, now, they were pretty low to the ground. And he thought he could do it at about 55, but he miscalculated a little bit. And he wiped out the side of his car when he hit the concrete abutment. And he rolled it over, totaled his car out. He wasn't hurt. He got out of it, one thing and another. But we all came to the conclusion that, well, 55 then must be about the top range of going under there. Now, I'm sure that today with modern engineering, if you had a 280Z or some sports car, a Porsche or something, you'd probably go under there at 60 or maybe 70. I don't know. But, you know, you're dealing with law here. And that's all I'm pointing out to you is that there are certain laws that are in place, whether they're physical or whether they're economic. You know, they can be spiritual laws, I guess you could call them, moral laws. And then what we find out is that if you violate those laws, like thou shalt not commit adultery, you know, every time you go to the whorehouse, you don't get VD every time. I know a lot of guys that have been to the whorehouse and never got a dose of clap. But then there are some guys that did. And so it's a risk that you run. Get my point? You take your chances, and, you know, sometimes there's winners and sometimes there's losers. Well, economics works the same way, and you got these 17 economic laws in the scripture. Now, the creator of the universe has been around for a long time. You know, he says he's been here forever. He's without beginning and without end, so that's longer than I've been around. And then he said, well, now let me give you some advice here on economics. He says, don't practice usury. That's where you loan money and you give a guy $100 and you charge him 6% interest and you expect him to pay you back 106. So, you know, here comes God. He comes down. He says, now don't do that. Well, it works both ways. And so if you're the guy that's going to borrow the $100 from me, you should say to me, well, George, I need the $100 and I hope you'll lend it to me, but I'm not going to pay you the $6 interest because it's against the law and we shouldn't do that. So, you know, you have to agree to pay it, and I have to have the gonads to charge it in order for you and I to violate that law. But, you know, we've been doing that for a long time, and you didn't die just because you went down and bought a car and agreed to pay somebody interest on it. You made your payments, and you got the car, and you lived life happily ever after. Or you bought a house, and you paid interest on it. And, you know, now you've got the house and so on, and as far as you know, there wasn't any penalty to pay. But in most cases, there's a penalty to pay, but maybe you didn't recognize the penalty. Maybe there was a penalty and you went ahead and paid it and you thought, well, that's no big deal. Now, sometimes penalties get pretty heavy. When you have a traffic accident, sometimes people get killed. That's a heavy-duty penalty. Sometimes they get hurt bad and maybe they end up in a wheelchair for the rest of their life, and that's not so good. And then sometimes, you know, like the kid I'm telling you about here, totals out his car and walks away from it. Another guy, he hits the thing at 90 miles an hour, smashes the roof down onto the seats, throws the engine, knocks the engine clear out of the car. You know, kills the guy, and that's a heavy-duty penalty. So, moral of the story here is that sometimes penalties are heavy-duty, sometimes they're light-duty, but there's always a penalty there. There's an outcome. There's going to be an outcome. It would be good if you could figure out what the outcome is before you do the act. There used to be a TV program on here, and this guy used to say, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. Now, you don't get caught every time you break the law, but you know, when you do get caught breaking the law, you know, the judge is going to lay this penalty on you. And then sometimes it's a fine, sometimes it's got some jail, and you know, you got to figure that out. Now, getting back here to these 19 facts about the deindustrialization of America that's going to blow your mind, every one of these factoids in here has a law. It has one of these 19 laws that's been violated. Either we did it as a nation, we did it as an individual, it was the company's policy, it was the bank and their policy, it was the government and their policy. But every single one of these 40 bizarre statistics that will reveal the horrifying truth about the collapse of the U.S. economy. So in the last program, I'm going to give you these 17 laws. So stick around and we'll cover the 17 laws. But as we progress along, I'm going to tell you what these problems are. And then for little guys like us, you know, they're telling us, we've got an election coming up here as I speak, and they're telling us we need to vote these guys out or vote the other guys in. So I want to tell you a little something about this voting thing. I've been around watching this voting going on for a long time, and I came from a very politically astute family. I mean, our people are right on top of politics, and long hours and hours of discussion concerning candidates from Tom Dewey and Harry Truman and Franklin Roosevelt and so on down the line. And I was always of the opinion, I learned this in school also, that we need to get out there as citizens and vote. And they'd tell me, well, now, you know, if you don't vote, you don't have any complaint coming about who's in office. And I've heard these stories, but let me tell you here what the bottom line to that is. Since 1787, we Americans have been voting. And we have two elections in each election cycle. The cycle is 4 years when we elect our president or when we elect our governor. And then we have an election in between where we elect our representatives and our senators. And here in the United States, this is one of those midterm, they call it midterm elections. So the president's not up for election, but all of the House of Representatives is, and a third of the Senate, and a bunch of governorships, and a lot of legislators in their respective state legislatures. And we've been voting in these processes now for about 230 years. And our problems, which we had some problems back in 1787, and we've always had problems, and that's a given, no doubt about that. But the problems that we're facing today, and especially in our economy, are so much worse than anything we've ever seen in this country from the very beginning, as to pale into insignificance. Man, we got some big-timey problems now. These are problems that aren't going to be solved by voting, and I'll show you why right here. If, in fact, we could vote the bad guys out and vote the good guys in, there might be some merit to voting. But boys and girls, we have never voted the bad guys out in 230 years. And that's because we don't know who the bad guys are. Now, I'm watching my TV at night, and we've got a senatorial race going on here. In our state, in Missouri. And one side, the Democrat, is a woman, and she says, this guy Roy Blunt's the worst thing that God ever put breath into. And she tells about all the bad things that this guy Roy Blunt's been doing. And if only 10% of what that lady says about Roy Blunt is true, that guy is dog poop. Now, Roy Blunt comes back, and he says of his Democratic opponent, he says, now this woman over here is a pawn for the president and Nancy Pelosi, and if that woman gets into office, here's what she's going to do, and boy, this is really going to be bad news. Okay? And if only one-tenth of what he says about his Democratic opponent over here is true, then that woman is dog poop, and we ought to avoid her like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, that would tell us, then, that we need to select some third party, because I'm sure that a lot of what she says about him and he says about her is probably true, in which case these are not people that we want in office. But one's a Republican, the other's a Democrat, and that's who's going to get elected, one or the other. Now, any third, fourth, or fifth choice that you and I might have isn't going to happen, and that's what would have to happen if you were going to have any change. Because the Republicans and the Democrats in this country are controlled by the same people, the banks, the multinational corporations, and the media. They control the politicians. They buy those politicians and put them in office. And so we've had these economic problems develop over the last 230 years at the same time that we've been voting. So if voting was the solution to our problem, then we wouldn't have any problem to start with because the voting process never would have allowed it to develop. And if the voting process could solve this problem, it would have already solved the problem after it developed. Now, because we have the problem and it's never been solved in the past, then it's not likely that it's going to be solved in this election cycle or in any election cycle in the future. Now, you can sit there and say, well, that's pessimistic. No, I think that's realistic. I think that's where the state of affairs is. Now, I'm not telling you not to vote. You know, get out there and vote and do whatever you think you need to do. But it isn't going to solve your problem. And I need a problem. Little Georgie Gordon needs to solve his problem right now. I've got to have a solution for my problem. And I'm contending that you probably do also. So when we look at these 19 facts about the deindustrialization of America that are going to blow your mind, well, then the logical conclusion then would be we need to turn around this deindustrialization of America. So in 2008, we elected a new president. Well, the deindustrialization is increasing. It's not decreasing. And so the people are just mad as hell. And they're sitting there saying, well, our jobs are being exported, and this president isn't making any meaningful changes to that. So therefore, we're going to change back to the Republicans. Well, excuse me, boys and girls, but under Bush, he exported 6 million jobs. And remember, we elected Bush because we had Clinton, who was a Democrat. So under Clinton, this WTO program was enacted. This is the World Trade Organization. That isn't where this started. So let me tell you a story. I thought this was strange back in 1980, 79. Maybe even as early as 78, but it was probably around 78, 79, or 80. And I got a letter from the Small Business Administration. I was running a small company employing 30 people in Boise, Idaho, manufacturing furniture. And the Small Business Administration said that they would loan me $500,000 to move my business to Juarez, Mexico, into the free trade zone. And that as an American manufacturer in the Mexican free trade zone, I could import raw materials from the United States or Mexico duty-free. And then I could ship my products out of Mexico into the United States duty-free and so on. Now, in Boise, Idaho, I was paying $6 an hour labor. In Juarez, Mexico, I can pay as little as $2 an hour labor. So it was a great advantage. Now, I just decided that I didn't want to live in Juarez, Mexico, but as a businessman, I said, now, that just makes all the sense in the world. And I can remember asking myself, I said, why in the hell would our government want to encourage businesses in America to move to Mexico? How is that going to benefit these 30 employees that are working for this company here in the United States? It'll benefit me. It'll benefit Mexico. It may benefit a lot of other people, but it sure still isn't going to benefit these 30 workers. And I just elected not to do it. Now, American business has been using capital furnished by the Small Business Administration, that's your tax dollars at work, and by the banks and the financial institutions of America to encourage people like me, businessmen, to move their businesses to China, Mexico, and all over the world. And every time we do that, it puts you workers out of employment. It's good for us. It's good for the Stanley Tool Company. I'm sure it's good for Boeing Aircraft to have their engines built in Singapore. But how in the hell does that benefit workers in America? I'm just throwing it out, you know. Now, evidently, you voters out there believed that it was going to benefit you because you have consistently, over the last 50 years, voted for the politicians, both Republicans and Democrats, who have engineered and brought these policies into fruition. For instance, you cannot build a 747 in the United States of America. You can't build one here. You cannot build an aircraft carrier in the United States of America. The anchors, the castings that go into the aircraft carrier come from USA, Japan. And that's because we've developed policies in this country against foundries. You can't have a foundry in the United States because foundries pollute the air. And so the foundries have all moved. They've moved to India, China, South Korea, and Japan. So now when you want to build a ship in the United States, you have to go to Japan, South Korea, India, in order to get the castings that you need. Evidently, it's okay to pollute the air in Japan and South Korea and China, but you can't pollute the air in Pittsburgh or Chicago or Houston, Texas. I don't know if that's good policy or bad policy. I just want to tell you that the foundry workers are gone. Now, we used to break up ships in the United States. And I can remember in Alameda, California, back in the 1960s, there was a shipyard there named Todd Shipyard, and they employed 6,000 people. Well, and more than that. They had a layoff there one time. They laid off 6,000 people. I don't know how many people they employed. It was something more than 6,000, but they laid off. It was a hell of a big thing, you know, to lay off 6,000 people out of one shipyard in one time. And Todd Shipyard said at that time, back in the 60s, says, we cannot compete with these foreign yards that are breaking up ships. You know, when a ship is run for 30 years, they want to bring it in, put it in the dry dock, and then they cut it up for scrap and remeld it. And that's called breaking up a ship. Now, let me tell you where ships are broken up. It's over in Bangladesh. They take a ship out in the ocean, and they steam it up to full throttle. And then they've got a big sandy beach there, and they run that thing ashore on the beach during high tide. They wait until the tide is high, as high as they can get it, and then they beach that ship. Then they climb off of it, and they let the natives over there. And these guys that are in Bangladesh, they're barefoot, and they don't have hard hats. They don't have safety goggles. And they get up on that ship, and then they start cutting the thing up with torches, and they reduce it down, and they load it by hand. These men, by the thousands, they're getting paid $1 or $2 a day. And they just break that thing up by hand. They don't have cranes. They don't have dry docks. They don't have OSHA or the EPA or the State Tax Commission or anybody else. And they do a hell of an efficient job breaking up ships. And you can understand the logic behind it. The shipping company says, if we go to the Todd shipyard to break up this ship, it's going to cost us, you know, $10 million. And if we beach this thing over in Bangladesh, they'll do it for $1 million, and we'll save $9 million in the process. Well, if that was your decision to make, where would you want to break up your ship? You know, hey, let's send this thing over to Bangladesh. Now, in America, we used to have a way to deal with that. We had policies and laws in this country that required that you do business in this country if you want those benefits. Now, our Congress and our President and our multinational corporations and our banks have come up with policies, and we have changed those laws and those policies. And then there's an outcome. There's a cause and effect relationship that occurs from that. Ted Kennedy one day was just mad as a wet hen, you know, about the Stanley Tool Company moving from, I think it was Stamford, Connecticut, was up in New England. And the Stanley Tool Company, they make good tools, American-made tools, tape measures, and tools of all kinds, and they moved to China or someplace. He was mad as hell. He said that they were un-American and blah, blah, blah. Now, here's what happened. I remember walking over here to the Ace Hardware store in Theodosia. Now, a 25-foot Stanley contractor's measuring tape, 25-footer, cost $12. I had been paying about, you know, $10, $11, $12 for Stanley tapes for years. And one day I walked in there, and here was what appeared to be a Stanley tape. It was black and yellow. It didn't say Stanley on it, but it looked just like a Stanley tape. And it was $3.65, and I bought it. And I took it home, and it was a good tape. And then some years later, I heard that the Stanley Company was moving from the United States to some place overseas. Now, let's be realistic and intelligent people. I'm an American consumer, and I want to get the most for my money. So I walk into the Ace Hardware store, and here's a Stanley tape for $12, and here's a tape from China for $3.65, or approximately one-third the price. Where do I want to spend my money? And I want to save $8 so that I can go down to the donut shop and drink coffee with the boys and eat donuts with the $8 savings that I made on this tape. That's what I want to do. Meanwhile, the workers who are making these tapes and getting paid $20 an hour or $15 an hour, whatever they're getting paid, have now lost their jobs in Connecticut to the Chinese guy who's getting paid $2 or $3 a day turning out the same tape or a tape similar in quality. Boys and girls, you and I buying these foreign products does absolutely nothing for our fellow Americans, does nothing for our economy except sink it. We're doing this to ourselves. It isn't something, you know, that's being imposed upon us. You have a choice to make, and so do I. And we make our choices every day in the marketplace. And we make our choices every day when we vote. Now, we have been voting for these cheap imports for more than 50 years. And all of you people that are unemployed, you were out here buying those cheap imports, weren't you? Now, I didn't move my company to Juarez, Mexico, but it wasn't because I didn't want to. It was because I didn't want to live in Juarez, Mexico. Now, had I not cared, or had my company been bigger and I could have lived in Phoenix or someplace else, I might have moved it down there. And that's because I was being encouraged to. Now, I want to tell you something here. My company was never worth $500,000, and when we liquidated the company, I believe we sold everything there, including the dies and tools and everything, the inventory, for $275,000. And here's the Small Business Administration saying to me they'll loan me $500,000. They were prepared to loan me twice as much as my company was worth in order to get me to move to Juarez, Mexico. Now, that ought to tell you something. Now, that would tell me that there are some people, that there are some business interests that have an agenda that far, far exceeds anything that little Georgie Gordon had in his mind back in 1978 or 9 or 80. Now, you know, I'm just a Joe Sixpack like everybody else, and I'm not trying to export jobs, and I'm not trying to downgrade America or badmouth anybody. I just wanted to report to you what's going on. Now, I want to tell you about these bad guys over here. They're bankers. Bankers, and not every guy that's working for a bank is necessarily a bad guy, but the people that are running these banks, they have an agenda. They've got a plan that they want to put into operation. And the politicians that are enacting these laws, they've got a plan that they want to put into operation. And these multinational corporations, they've got a plan. And all these people are in the process of putting their plans into operation, just like you've got plans that you want to put into operation. And all of these plans that all of these people have, in some cases, are conflicting. And these conflicting plans are at the root of our problem. We're not united in this country with a single solitary plan for America. We've got people that want to merge America into an international new world order. We've got people that want to bring us back to nationalization. We've got other people with other agendas and other ideas. And as a result of that, there's a contest being played out here, and you and I are part of that contest. And you and I have choices to make. And there are going to be results, and those results are going to impact upon me, they're going to impact upon you, and everybody else, and whether we like it or not. So I've got a stake in this, and you've got a stake in it. And what you and I do over the next year, 2 years, or 5 years is going to impact upon our standard of living for the rest of our lives. It's the way life is. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the people that are on, for those of you that are on the Internet and have a computer, you can download that free general law CD package by going to our website at georgegordon.org and then click on to the archives page, and it's there, and you can just download it. You don't have to call us or do jack squat. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about Billions for the Bankers. It's a little booklet that was put out by a fellow named Sheldon Emery. I don't know if you can still get this or not. This one's dated 1982, and it's just as true, just as accurate, just as correct today as it was the day he printed it, save for we're no longer, what's the number here, $800 billion in debt. We're now $13.6 or $8 trillion in debt. It's much worse than it was back in 1982 when this book was first put out. And I've reported on this before, but it was several years ago, and I thought I'd bring it up to date and give you some new numbers here and show you where the problem is worse today than it was 20 or 30 years ago. See, 1980, 90, 100, that's 30 years ago, practically 28. Now, let's take a look at these 19 facts about the deindustrialization of America that are going to blow your mind. You know, the United States is rapidly becoming the very first post-industrial nation on the earth. All great economic empires eventually become fat and lazy, and then they squander the great wealth that their forefathers have left to them. But the pace at which America is accomplishing this is absolutely amazing. It was America that was at the forefront of the Industrial Revolution, and it was America that showed the world how to mass produce everything from automobiles to televisions to airplanes. And it was the great American manufacturing base that crushed Germany and Japan during World War II. But now we are witnessing the deindustrialization of America, and tens of thousands of factories have left the United States in the last 10 years alone, and millions upon millions of manufacturing jobs have been lost during this same period. The United States has become a nation that consumes everything in sight and produces increasingly less and less. Now, do you know what our biggest export is today? What do you think is the biggest export that the United States of America exports to other countries in the world? Thinking about it, is it airplanes and automobiles, or is it wheat, corn, beans, soybeans, or is it iron ore or coal? Listen to this. It's waste paper. Waste paper. That's right. So tens of thousands of factories have left the United States, and now our biggest export is waste paper. The trash is the number one thing that we ship out to the rest of the world as we voraciously blow our money on whatever the rest of the world wants to sell us. Now, the United States has become bloated and spoiled, and our economy is now just a shadow of what it once was. Once upon a time, America could literally outproduce the rest of the world combined. And for instance, in 1950, 5 years after World War II, America was number one in the manufacture and the consumption of 15 of the top economic indicators of industrial production. America produced 100 million tons of steel that year, 1950. All the rest of the world combined produced 750,000 tons. So, you know, when we take a look at automobiles, 3.5 million automobiles produced in 1950, all the rest of the world produced, I got my numbers backwards here, all the rest of the world produced 750,000 automobiles. Steel production, all the rest of the world combined produced less than one-third of that amount. But it was 750,000 automobiles. The same thing was true with coal production, aluminum production, airplane production, and so on. America was number one in the 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production. Today, as I speak, we are no longer number one in any of the 15 industrial economic indicators. Now, something has happened that's been pretty dramatic in the last 60 years. From 1950 to today, something pretty dramatic has occurred. Today, that's no longer true. Americans sure do consume more than anyone else in the world. But if deindustrialization of America continues at this current pace, that possible kind of future, or what kind of possible future, are we going to be leaving to our children? Any great nation throughout history has been great at making things. So if the United States continues to allow its manufacturing base to erode at a staggering pace now in the world, can the U.S. continue to consider itself to be a great nation? We have created the biggest debt bubble in the history of the world in an effort to maintain a very high standard of living. But the current state of affairs is not anywhere close to sustainable. Every single month, America goes more and more into debt, and every single month, America gets poorer. So what happens when the debt bubble pops? This deindustrialization of the United States should be a top concern for every man, woman, and child in the country. But sadly, most Americans do not have any idea what is actually going on around them. And for people like that, take this article and print it out and hand it to them, and perhaps what they will read below will shock them badly enough to awaken them from their slumber. So let me ask you this. Now, let's suppose that we did that. Let's suppose that I took this article here and I printed 300 million of them and I passed them out to every man, woman, and child in America. Do you believe for a minute that the people who are going to vote for the Democrats in the upcoming election would turn around and vote for the Republicans, or vice versa, or that the people who are going to vote for Republicans and Democrats would change and vote for some third party? Do you believe that if I gave this piece of paper to the President of the United States, Barack Obama, that he would change his policies? Do you believe that if the members of Congress, if I handed this to each member of Congress, every governor in the United States, every representative in the United States, that they would say, oh my God, yes, Mr. Gordon, I see the problem, and boy, I'm going to get right on this. Do you believe that? Boys and girls, most of the politicians, most of the businesses, the big businesses, the bankers and these people, they know not only these 19 things that are going to blow your mind, they created them. It's their policy. It was their intention to export American jobs overseas and to destroy the American economy, which they have accomplished, past tense. This economy is dead, D-E-D, dead. You're not going to revive it. Now, it's going to continue on for a few more years in this decline until they're ready to make their next move. So the purpose for this week's exercise is to help you make a decision, and you're going to make the decision, not me. I made mine. I'm comfortable with my decision. But I thought I would bring this to your attention, and let's see if you're as comfortable with your decision. What are you going to do over the next 5 years to alleviate this problem? Because the deindustrialization is going to continue. In fact, it's going to speed up. It's going to get faster. The dollar, which is now at 79 cents, is going to decline to 40. The hyperinflation that is in the wings is going to take root, and it is going to wipe out all of your savings. So you know that 401k plan that you've got, and you've got $100,000 in it? All right. Now, you know today that $100,000 will buy X number of loaves of bread. Well, it may be, like it was in Germany in 1924, that it will take $100,000 to buy one loaf of bread. And then when that comes, you're going to be wiped out. So you should be preparing for that. And when we get to that portion of it, I'll make some suggestions, and I'll say, you know, I think that maybe while you still can, you should save as much of that $100,000 as you possibly can. Maybe you should buy those loaves of bread today so that you'll have them to eat tomorrow. I know it's a wild new idea. Now, here are the following 19 facts about the deindustrialization of America that's going to blow your mind. Number one, the United States has lost approximately 42,400 factories since 2001, and about 75% of those factories employed over 500 people when they were still in operation. So let me just do a little arithmetic here, and let's see what we've got here. 42,400 factories in 10 years. So we go 42,400 divided by 10. That's 4,240 factories in America. And those factories close their doors, and then they move somewhere else. 4,240 factories per year. Divided by 365 days in a year, that's 11.6. That's about 12 factories a day close their doors in the United States. That's been the historical number over the past 10 years, but it's accelerating. So it's going to be 13, 14, or 15 of these factories will be closing their doors every day, right now, today, tomorrow, next week, and next month. Now, these 42,400 factories employed about 500 people each. Well, 75% of them employed 500. Let's just use that number. 42,500 times 500. That's 21,250,000 jobs. 21,250,000 jobs have been exported. We could do it this way. We could just use the 500 times 75% of the 42,500 factories times 0.75 is 31,875 times 500, and that's 15,937,500 jobs, and we'll leave the other 25% out. That's in 10 years. 15 million jobs in this country have been exported overseas. Now, we didn't have this problem in 1950, 1940, 1890, 1850. This problem has developed since 1950. It has come upon us over the last 60 years. We have been doing something over the past 60 years that we were not doing in the 150 years prior to that. Now, it would seem like to me that we should stop doing whatever it was that we've been doing over the past 60 years, and that we should go back to doing whatever it was that we were doing in the first 150 years that created all of these jobs and created all of this wealth to start with. Now, that's just my common sense. I'm not telling you how to vote, and I'm not telling you what to do. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Number two, Dell Incorporated, one of America's largest manufacturers of computers, has announced plans to dramatically expand its operations in China with an investment of over $100 billion over the next decade. So Dell Computer Company, big name here in America. Over the next 10 years, they're going to spend $100 billion building manufacturing plants and employing people. Why don't they spend that $100 billion here in the United States of America? Well, because if they build the plants in China, they can hire workers for $2 an hour, and if they build them here in America, they have to pay $10 or $15 or $20. I was reading a story the other day, and a fellow, I forgot who this guy is now, but he's also a big manufacturing guy. And he said that when they spend $1 billion here in the United States to build a manufacturing plant or something like that, he said the red tape to get the permits and to hire people and to pay the taxes on them and all of the OSHA and EPA and the regulations that come down are so great that he says we don't want to do business in the United States. We just want to sell our products here, but we don't want to do business here. You see, when you build in China, you don't have those regulations. You don't have OSHA and EPA. For instance, in California, when you want to build a house, it costs you $30,000 just to get the permits to build the house. You could be building a little cheap, inexpensive one-bedroom house that you're gonna build for $30,000. It'll cost you $30,000 to get the permits for it. Or you can build a million-dollar mansion, and then it'll cost you $30,000 to get the permits. So $30,000 to build a million-dollar mansion is chicken feed. But $30,000 to build a $30,000 house makes it uneconomical. That's why you can't build cheap, inexpensive, affordable housing in California. Now, there was a time in California when you didn't even have permits. Today, those permits are at such a level of onerous problem-making that it becomes uneconomical. We just don't build houses there. For instance, here in my county in Missouri, we don't have building permits. We don't have any problems here. The people in Ozark County are living just fine. For you people in San Jose, California, and San Francisco, as you gasp in absolute horror, like Judy Hartson, how in the world can those people live without building permits? And the answer is, very well, thank you. And it doesn't cost us $30,000 to get the permits to build a house here. We can build houses, no problems. We got carpenters here that can drive nails just like they can in California. Oh, and by the way, we have electricity here too. Number three, Dell has announced that it will be closing its last large U.S. manufacturing facility in Winston-Salem, North Carolina in November. Approximately 900 jobs will be lost. So not only are they going to spend $100 billion to build new plants over in China, they are going to close the last plant that they have in this country. Now, why is that? And why can't we change the laws back to the laws that we had in 1950 before Dell or anybody else could move their plant to China or some other country? Huh? You know, kind of like if you don't produce it in the United States, you can't sell it here. You know, we could do something wild and crazy like that, you know. It's fine. You want to make your computers in China? Good, sell them to the Chinks. Don't sell them here. Now, we used to have that policy. It was called trade policy. We've done it before. I just wanted to throw it out to you just so that you could see if the Democrats that are in power today wanted to do that, they've got a majority and a president and they could enact it. But I'll guarantee you this, when you reelect the Republicans and put them back in office, they're not going to change this policy, and Dell is going to close that last plant in North Carolina, and Dell is going to spend that $100 billion over the next decade, and they are going to spend it in China, not the United States. And I don't think that voting is going to change that outcome. Now, you go out there and prove me wrong, would you? Get out there and show me that isn't going to work that way. Now, that's number three. Now, we've got some more to go, and I'm running out of time here, so I'm going to let this one slide. Let me see if there's a date and time. This came from J. Richard Nymila, and it's RICNIEMELA at earthlink.net. Why don't you try that one? J. Richard Nymila, or Nymila, at RICNIEMELA at earthlink.net. See if you can get that document between now and tomorrow when we take this subject up again. Hey, let me give you a final reminder here that you are listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.